From The Hazard with Hearts by M.A. Lee, Book 12 in the Hearts in Hazard series. This segment is to introduce you to the secondary protagonist, Maxwell Herrick, the 9th Earl of Sheldrake, and Vivian's husband. Behind Max, Dr. Bill murmured to his sister. Julius Cavell said something to amuse Reggie, Max's cousin, and Max wished all four of them to perdition, or at least gone from his home. When the door opened, he tensed, wondering which guest had decided this room held the interesting conversation. "My lord?" That tentative question wasn't a guess, but his secretary, Lyman Calderbrook. Max could not convince the young man that he had a perfect right to bring concerns to him at any hour of the day. New to his position a decade ago, his hesitation had fit with the humble mien of someone headed for the clergy. Max had hoped that the young man would assume the living from the aging Reverend Norville. Then Calderbrook abandoned his dream. Enamored of Cressida, Max's first wife, he absorbed her mockery of priest who preached against sin while knowing nothing of it. Calderbrook hadn't plunged himself into corruption. He merely sat, red-faced and squirming, while Cressida enlarged on human sin. Max had planned to push Calderbrook back to the archbishop. Then Cressida's suicide devastated his secretary. So he persisted at Sheldrake, still tentative after all his years of service. "What is it, Calderbrook? Have you those letters to be signed?"
"Not yet, my lord."
"Then what is the matter? Has Chepstow come to you with a problem?"
"No, my lord."
"Then what is the concern?"
"Lady Sheldrake, my lord."
"My mother?"
"Your wife."
"Is this about the attack this morning?"
"An attack?" Miss Beale exclaimed.
Her brother looked up with a frown. Reggie stopped sprawling. Cavell snapped closed his book of poems.
"No, my lord."
"Out with it, Calderbrook."
"No," his cousin rested his elbows on his knees. "I want to hear about this attack on your wife. That is what you said, isn't it?"
"Is she injured?" Dr. Bill asked, calm as ever. Max had judged the doctor as a steady man in a crisis, only to watch Bill fall like a foolish pup under the spell of both his former wives. Cavell added to the clamor for information. And Max had a sudden vision of a strong man hoisting one of the quarried blocks up the Perrin steps and placing it ready on the window sill. Once in place, a frail accomplice had only to push, and it would topple over at the right time. When Vivian was below, peering through an arrow slit, he had requested that she wait until he could accompany her. She might have, if she hadn't had to contend with guests who sought ways to cause her awkward discomfort. She staved off a reaction before them, but that had seeded her rebellion against his request. Yet why visit the ruins? What had someone said to drive that need? A glimpse of Vivian's inner disquiet was all someone had needed to attempt to harm her. No, a block on her head would not have harmed her. It would have killed her. Someone had intended murder. A murder that would look like an accident. Frustration growled in his throat. Calderbrook looked shocked. Max refused to look at his guest. "I grow impatient, Calderbrook. Best be off if you cannot bring yourself to state your difficulty."
"My lord," he implored, but Max only glared.
"The Countess, my lord. She requires me in attendance at dinner this evening."
"And," Max prompted when the pause became dramatic.
"That is it, my lord. I am in your service. I am not a guest. I am not even in the habit of dining with you and your lady wife in the evening. It is not fitting."
"Enough," he snapped. "You dine with us when the Dowager Lady Sheldrake and the Reverend and Mrs. Rampling come to dinner. My wife requires you at this dinner. You will join us before and chase the port with us after." "Since you order it, my lord." "Lady Sheldrake orders it, Calderbrook, and that should be enough for your obedience."
You did not previously permit your wives to give orders to me.
You were enthralled by my first wife and spiteful to my second one from her first day in the house." His secretary drew himself up to his fullest, unprepossessing height.
"I have been cordial."
"Yes, I have noticed. In future, you will amend your behavior. Am I clear?"
"My lord, if my service to you is lacking..."
"In this matter only," he interrupted. "Will you amend your demeanor to offer my lady wife the proper respect due her position and my regard for her?"
"As your lordship requires."
"I do require it." When Calderbrook didn't leave, Max wondered the reason he lingered. "Anything more?"
"No, my lord."
"Very well." He turned his back and pretended to watch the workers from London scurrying around the crates they were unboxing. When the door shut, signaling Calderbrook's exit, one of the men gave a whistle. Reggie, likely, but Max refused to give them more fodder for gossip. Dr. Beale's steady voice broke the silence. "Tell us about this attack on Lady Sheldrake."
Chapter 5.
Max hesitated to share what he did not fully understand. He had Vivian's account and the report that Chepstow had wrangled out of the groom. He didn't want to speculate more. If someone played tricks rather than acted with malice, he didn't want to give them any emotion of his to relish. Not one of the people in this sitting room did he count as friends, yet he often found himself in their company. They certainly irritated him less than others in the district. Dr. Prosper Beale had arrived nearly 2 decades ago, long before Max took the reins of the estate from his ailing father. He came as a journeyman physic to Dr. Hagler, who surprised everyone when he died within a couple of years of the younger man's arrival. Beale assumed the old doctor's position and never looked back. Riding a daily circuit, he visited every person in the district, an exercise that kept flesh from adhering to his wiry frame. His hatchet face matched his personality. People complained of his sharp manner, yet they trusted this doctor they still called from London. His spinster sister, Charity Beale, had joined him a decade ago, after the deaths of their parents. Her arrival had ousted the housekeeper of long standing in Bramblebush Cottage. That worthy headed for parts unknown. People watched with bated breath for a mass exodus of the other servants, but only Mrs. Kershaw, the housekeeper, left. The grumblings that new brooms sweep clean gradually died away. Max would not have invited the third guest to Sheldrake Hall. He had no liking for Julius Cavell, a skilled portraiture artist who persisted in the neighborhood even though he had little scope for his art. His talent redeemed him, and his paintings of both Cressida and Rowena graced the long gallery on the second floor. Max had always wondered how far Cavell's flirtation with Cressida had advanced. He knew how far he had advanced with Rowena. At Rowena's graveside, Cavell mourned his unborn child. "My son," he had wept. "My son, my only son." And he blamed Max, even though Max had arrived from London 2 days after his wife Rowena's fall. The one man that Max pitied for his fascination with Cressida was Lyman Calderbrook, an unearthly creature confronted with Cressida's lure. Only an archangel could withstand her sensual nature. Beale had fallen as well. Medicine had consumed the man for 2 decades. Confronted with Cressida's teasing temptation and Rowena's idyllic beauty, he had no more chance than Calderbrook. Of the 3 other men in the room, Max understood his cousin Reggie's infatuation, but he didn't understand the reason Reggie remained mired in the past. His cousin had courted Cressida first. He stood with the many beaux surrounding her, each one trying to distinguish himself. Then Max arrived in London. By the end of the first season, Max was on fire for her. Unknown to him, Reggie had a plan to win the debutante, but fate played its trump card. Fate called him away when the squire fell ill. When Reggie returned to London, Max was on the verge of proposing.
Fisticuffs hadn't resolved the conflict between them. They let Cressida choose, and she chose title and wealth. His cousin had turned against Max, not the beauty. He begrudged every day of their marriage. They only reached an amicable truce after her death. Cavell, though. Max despised Cavell. He knew the artist would soon demand to paint Vivienne, a third painting for the third wife of the 9th Earl of Sheldrake. In that way he would insinuate himself into her life. His flattery would seem truth, backed up with his artistic skill. His new wife would be as pleased with her portrait as his first two wives had been. The problem was how Vivienne would express her displeasure. Dr. Bill resumed his seat beside his sister. What difficulties did Lady Sheldrake encounter on her morning ride? Cavell leaned back. He swung one neatly shod foot, choosing town wear, rather than the breeches and boots that most men affected when they came into the country. No woman enjoys being caught in a rainstorm while out riding, Bill. Not even when walking in the city, Miss Bill sent a general smile around the room as she countered Cavell's intended slight. Summer showers caught me several times when I lived in London. Max had hoped a friendship would arise between Vivienne and Miss Bill. He hadn't fostered one, for a quarter century stood between the two women. Rowena claimed that her friendship with Cavell began because so few ladies of her age were also of her station. He should muddle over motives later, when this discussion with its sharp edges had ended. He needed to listen for anything that peeled out of tune. Would he hear the note? Discord reigned between him and half his guest. He wished his friend Patton Stanbrough knew everyone. That level-headed man had a keen objectivity that eluded Max. Stanny and his wife had arrived yesterday, along with most of the guests. A London resident, he knew few of the other guests, and knowledge was necessary to dissect motives and clues. Max needed to correct their assumptions about his wife, though. She wasn't a weak-willed woman. The rainstorm was not my wife's complaint. Her ride this morning took her to the old ruins. While she explored, a falling block nearly struck her. My goodness, one of those quarry stones? It could have killed her. Exactly so, Miss Beale. Surely you banned the old ruins. Cavell had a genius for casting Max as a tyrant. Was that how he influenced both Cressida and Rowena? A few cunning words, and the shaky relationship between husband and wife began to collapse. A husband and wife, who were virtual strangers, meeting only in company, exchanging conversation during the length of a dance, having few private words before their society marriage. Banned the ruins? Max forced a grin as he responded to Cavell. I do not ban. I point out the danger. The new Lady Sheldrake has the wit to understand. Yet you became distracted with the steward's talk of repairs to a barn. That is the conversation I overheard upon my arrival yesterday, wasn't it? The new and neglected Lady Sheldrake ventures off to explore the dangerous ruins. Neglected. That word was a new addition to Cavell's poisonous vocabulary. Mr. Cavell, I dare say Lady Sheldrake's exploration was not the obvious defiance that you suggest. Should your wife need something to calm her hysterics, Dr. Bill suggested, I have a concoction with me. A few minutes with her should also induce a state of relaxation. That is not necessary, Dr. Bill, Vivian said. She had entered quietly. Her strong voice carried clearly. To Max, she looked like a radiant Valkyrie, the Norse battle maiden who chose the heroes and flew them to Valhalla for feasting with the gods. In only a few minutes, her maid had worked wonders. Vivian's wet hair was dry and piled atop her head, yellow ribbons competing with loose blonde curls. A pale yellow dress brought the late summer sun into the room. As she glided forward, Max extended a hand to her and was gratified when she altered her path to come to him. Then he saw her eyes, a pale green cast blue, like the strange color of the clouds before a violent thunderstorm. Her gaze fastened on the doctor, and Max fought the betraying twitch of his mouth. Anger raining onto the good doctor should not be encouraged, however much he wanted to see it. He guided her to his chair, then remained, resting a hand on the chair's upholstered back. "You seem recovered from your drenching," Miss Beale ventured. "A little rain will not drown me, ma'am. Indeed, in London, I have returned home after shopping, not only wet but covered in mud and grime, splattered on my clothes by passing carriages, driven by young Corinthians, who find it amusing to splash through every puddle. Do you drive too rapidly on wet streets, Mr. Cavell?" "Never have I splashed a lady as lovely as you are, Lady Sheldrake. You are all sunshine, a brilliant light. My artist eye can paint that scene. Miss Beale, do you believe Mr. Cavell has never splashed a lady?"
"Certainly not, my lady. No young buck set loose with a phaeton can resist splashing."
"Proof," Cavell declared. "At that age, I was never forward enough to afford a phaeton or even a curricle. You must admit my lack of guilt. And as recompense, I demand the opportunity to sketch you. My husband will decide that." Max didn't hide his smirk. The past half hour had opened interesting windows to his wife. The widest window was his realization that, for all her young age, not yet 22, Vivienne was no gullible fool. He should have anticipated that. He had not been an hour in her father's company before he realized the man flitted from topic to topic, like a startled bird. Her father didn't hold the household reins. Someone else had kept them out of the ditch. "Your husband," Dr. Beale interrupted, "shared with us your lucky escape at the castle ruins this morning."
"He did?" She turned in the seat to look up at him.
"I hardly addressed it before your arrival, my dear. I had not yet mentioned that you saw someone above you after the block fell."
"Above?" Miss Beale seized upon the word. "You mean a person was in the tower and the block came from where they were?"
"Yes." Her cousin flinched. Then he leaned against the upholstery and spread his arms along the back of the sofa, an insolent pose with the ladies present. Reggie's narrowed gaze watched Vivienne, occasionally shifted to Max, then Beale, and he continued not to speak. That unusual reticence rang a discordant peal for Max. Would his own cousin attempt murder? What motive against Vivienne did Reggie have?
"This must be investigated," Miss Beale declared. "We have not yet had opportunity." Max hoped to depress the woman's obvious avidity. "You were nearly struck by this stone?"
"Who pushed it over?" Cavell asked. "Did anyone else see? How close did the stone fall to you?" Miss Beale seemed determined to collect all the details.
"My groom was there. The block fell where I stood a moment before. I was saved by a bird, if you can believe it."
Clever Vivienne, for she made them think the groom had witnessed the event. Cavell and Miss Beale continued to drag details from Vivienne. Reggie and the doctor, though, merely watched.
"I would have had hysterics," Miss Beale proclaimed.
"As would I," the artist agreed. Hearing the event a second time, dragged point by point from his wife, Max remembered her crushed hat, its shape destroyed and its velvet ruined. For a third time, death reached for his wife. This time, death missed. When Vivienne's account ended, Dr. Beale braced on his elbows. He clasped his hands loosely between his spread knees. "You dwell upon this, Lady Sheldrake, as if it is a momentous event."
"I find it momentous," his sister counted. "Prosper, she was nearly killed. The merest happenstance saved her."
"A lucky escape indeed, with only one witness." His gaze lifted to cross Max's. "An impressionable young groom, eager to serve the new Lady Sheldrake."
"You can examine the block that fell," Vivienne said, her tart voice revealing that she didn't like his doubts. "If you need corroborating evidence, you may examine my poor riding hat, quite crushed, as I would have been."
"I find it remarkable that you needed so little time to compose yourself before joining us."
"You are almost too composed."
"You would not have found me composed at the ruins." Yet you confuse me, Dr. Bill. You expect my lack of composure, and now complain I am too composed. My apologies, sir. My lady, when did I expect your lack of composure? Did you not offer Sheldrake a concoction that would calm my hysterics? I overheard, you see, as I entered the room. May I also quibble with one point, doctor? I do not believe that the mere reportage of an event to my husband, or to Miss Beale and you gentlemen, is to be construed as falling into hysterics. My apologies, my lady. I quite see that you are neither emotional nor dramatic. Miss Beale chuckled. Leave off, Prosper, do. Lady Sheldrake will obviously not become one of those emotional women who relies on your concoction. She is not one who wrings as much attention as possible from an event. I bow to your wisdom, sister dear.